Joe Sixpack firmly believes in the manner of religion and God that his preacher tells him to believe in. And that worked for a time. It worked through Nixon's, he talked about the silent majority. About compassionate conservatism, we have Republicans for a long time appealing to people, vote against your interest, you too can be rich someday. But then Friday happened. Nakedly, the Republicans who had just supported a financial bailout of people on Wall Street to the tune of $700 billion couldn't afford 1/50th of that sum, 2% of that sum, to try to allow retirees of auto plants to get the health care they were contracted to get. And I know I've been talking about this all week, but I still can't get over that fact. I guess I still can't get over the fact, not that they did it, I expect Republicans to do things like this, but that they did it in such an obvious way. Supporting foreign companies, Japanese companies, at the expense of American companies, nakedly. Nakedly admitting that the one thing they wanted to make sure was that workers lost their health care and lost their pensions. And they were willing to let the economy go into a deep depression unless we punished those workers. It still is a bit shocking. I want to explore that this hour. And I also want to take some of your calls at 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Because I want to know if enough people are talking about this. Yes, we on the horn talk about it, of course. But how about your friends? How about your neighbors? How about those conservative people? How about those people that say, well, you know, Republicans, they don't help me very much, but I'm pro-life. And I've got to make sure that poor black children, teenagers, keep having babies. Because, well, it would be wrong for that 14-year-old girl not to have the baby of, you know, that's going to ruin her life and the baby's life and won't be adopted anyway. I mean, people like that have been supporting Republican policies. But when will middle-class, working-class people recognize that it's all a charade, that Republicans are only telling them they support, all their prejudices and punishing gay people and women and black people and so forth, that really it's all about trying to get their money? Did you hear about the Madoff case? Do you know what I'm talking about? This guy, another Wall Street person, Bernard Madoff, happened to have the largest Ponzi scheme in American history. Now, you know what a Ponzi scheme is. A Ponzi scheme is where I say to you, hey, give me $100, and I'll give you $200 back in a month. And you think, wow, that's great. Great, I'll double my money. And then how do I get the money to pay you off? Well, I tell everybody that. And everyone keeps giving me $100. And then I use their money to pay you. And it keeps, as long as the pyramid keeps growing, and this is also called a pyramid scheme, but it's named from a guy named Ponzi, P-O-N-Z-I, who did this scheme in the 1920s. It keeps going until the whole thing collapses under its own weight. And the most recent people get messed up most of all. Well, this Ponzi scheme that happened is the largest one in American history. $50 billion. And you know what's shocking about Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme? Is that virtually no one noticed. I mean, after Wall Street does a $65 trillion legal Ponzi scheme with these credit derivatives, these side bets on mortgages, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that a mere $50 billion normal Ponzi scheme gets hardly any notice. Heck, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, didn't notice it. They haven't noticed anything for a long time. After all, this is the same SEC, run by the same Republican Chris Cox, that declared everything just fine 3 days before the whole market collapsed. So rich people are playing with all of our money, going down in flames, and the Republicans are doing their best to use our taxpayer dollars to finance the rich people's schemes. But can we give 1/50th of that amount? Can we give 2% of that amount to sustain manufacturing in America? Oh, I'm not defending the car companies. I'm not defending their making Humvees when they should have made hybrids. But that isn't the workers' fault. And many of you who heard my debate with Mike Lane know that even the best Republican spinmeister has a hard time defending the sheer cruelty of Ebenezer Scrooge. I mean, I heard Mike say, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry those 80-year-old retirees won't get their benefits, but the union should have made sure they would. But you know what? The unions did make sure they would. The unions signed long-term contracts. They went on strike to get these benefits. They even forewent current wages to get these benefits. These workers said, you know what? Pay me a buck less now, and that way I'll have that money when I retire. And they made the deal, and the company made the deal. And the only people that want to break the deal is, well, Republicans in Congress. So why do they want to break this deal? Well, Mike Lane says, well, I don't think that we taxpayers should be worrying about workers and their health care. I happen to think that our taxpayers should be worried about everyone's health care. If we had universal health care, this wouldn't be a problem now, would it? But what Mike Lane doesn't seem to realize is that his lack of compassion actually harms the rich people too. We learned long ago in the Reagan era that trickle-down economics doesn't work, that you can't give a ton of money to the rich people and hope that some of it trickles in crumbs down to those of us who are not super wealthy. But what I think the Republicans are starting to learn is that pain trickles up. That's right. When people are starving in America, when people lack health care in America, they go on things like Medicaid. They collect unemployment insurance. Welfare benefits are higher now than ever in about, 20, 30 years. I have to look at the recent headline. Unemployment skyrocketing. And guess what? Rich people get hurt too. I mean, even the masters of slaves understood that if you beat your slaves too much, they wouldn't be productive on the cotton field. Ebenezer Scrooge may have learned that if Tiny Tim doesn't get a Christmas present, his father won't work as hard for him as he could. The irony of all of this is that even if you lack complete compassion for anyone other than yourself, even if you're the most selfish human being alive, even if you're a Republican, in other words, you are made worse off when other Americans get screwed. I want to go through this hour and talk about unions, not just specifically what's going on recently, but what unions have done in the past. Because there's a reason why Republicans hate unions. And the reason they hate unions is because unions have been in the forefront of virtually every liberal movement in America. In 1949, and by the way, a lot of this comes from a wonderful op-ed from Washington Post columnist Harold Meyerson. He gathered these facts. I can't take credit for them. And I strongly urge you to read that article. In an article that's titled Destroying What the UAW Built, Harold Meyerson gives the history of the UAW. And he talks about the fact in 1949, 60 years ago, the UAW published a pamphlet titled A Small Car Named Desire. In 1949, 60 years ago, 30 years even before Jimmy Carter, the UAW was suggesting that maybe it would be better to build smaller cars rather than bigger ones. cars that cost less used lighter metals and burned fuel more efficiently. If you want to really knock someone's socks off with a trivia question, ask them what kind of gas mileage the Model T got. The Model T, of course, is the first mass-produced car, Henry Ford's creation. The Model T, which was rolled out, 1908? Something like that? 1910? Ask yourself, what was the technology of cars a century ago? How much gas mileage did they get? What do you think they got? 3 miles to the gallon in those days? 5 miles? I mean, after all, we've had improvements over 100 years. You'd be wrong. Great trivia question for your Republican friends. Ask them what the Model T got. The Model T got 25 miles to the gallon. The Model T did twice as good as most modern-day SUVs. In a century of progress, in a century where, you know, when the Model Ts were made, we didn't have airplanes mass-produced. You know, we certainly didn't have cell phones, computers. Heck, what did we have? We had railroads. That was about it. Well, what kind of technology existed in 1908? Not much. We have gone through amazing bouts of innovativeness in technology over the last century. But our fuel mileage standards have gone down. That's been true for a century, but a half century ago, the UAW was already talking about building smaller cars to increase fuel efficiency standards. This was before Saudi Arabia had us by our body parts, controlled us with their oil in China and Venezuela and all the other oil-producing dictators, Iran. The UAW was thinking ahead of time. In fact, its leader, Walter Reuther, was really, really looking in advance in ways that we think of Al Gore as a visionary. He was even more of a visionary. After Pearl Harbor, Reuther gave a detailed plan to help General Motors convert its auto plants to defense factories to help America in World War II. And it was much better than the company's plan. We also have an invention by Reuther and the UAW in the 1950s. He began annual cost of living adjustments. The idea that, guess what, over time, there's inflation. And therefore, workers' wages should go up at least as much as their cost of living. That may sound standard to you now, but in the 1950s, it was a real advance. And now, virtually every company follows the UAW's example. It's not just economic liberalism. Who do you think funded Martin Luther King's 1963 March on Washington? Answer, the UAW and other unions. Who do you think funded Cesar Chavez's farm workers union? The idea that it's not just auto workers, but even farm workers that should have a decent chance at the American dream. The UAW. The UAW even provided the conference center for the Students for Democratic Society, the SDS, the beginnings of what would become a very strong anti-war, anti-Vietnam movement. Yep. Thank you, UAW. They also helped give resources for the National Organization for Women. They were among the first to talk about national health care, which, let's face it, if we had it, we wouldn't have the massive problems we have today with General Motors providing people's health care. The government would be doing that. Now, do you see why the Republicans want to destroy the UAW? Do you see why they want to destroy the unions? It's not so much that they have complete contempt for ordinary working Americans, though I'm sure that's true. It's more that they recognize that the unions have always been in the forefront of social change. Now, are they perfect? Of course not. Is there corruption in unions? Yes, there's corruption in unions, like there's corruption in government. I'm sure there's pay to play, both with Rod Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois, and with the certain elements of the Teamsters. And obviously corruption should be rooted out. But the idea of Americans joining together as one, as a union, to work for a better America is, well, it's more than a century old. And it's more than a century of doing good. There's the old Chinese proverb about how easy it is to break individual sticks and how hard it is to break those same individual sticks when they're bonded together in a bundle. And it, of course, makes sense. And we know that that is what the Republicans want to destroy. As much as Mike Lane does not want to pay tax money for workers to get the health care that they were contractually promised by these auto companies, he never talked about lowering the salaries of the executives. Yeah, what about those executives? I mean, if American workers have to take the wages that the Japanese are paying to non-union workers in the South, shouldn't American executives have to take the same wages that Japanese executives make? Here's a hint. Japanese executives make one-tenth or so of what American executives make. Why aren't those salaries being discussed? As I pointed out on the show, besides, only 10% of a car's price is the wages anyway. $20,000 car, pay the workers nothing, it costs you $18,000. Pay the workers the same as the non-union wages, and that $20,000 car will probably cost you $19,800. It'll cost you the same. Compare that with some of the Wall Street products. Do you know what percentage of Wall Street firms, what percentage of their profits is based on salary? What percentage of their costs is based on salary? Harold Meyerson gives us the numbers. Not 10% as in the auto industry, but 60%. 60%. 60% of the profits and the costs at Bear Stearns, at Lehman Brothers, at AIG, it's all going to people's pockets. Now, why hasn't anyone argued that they need a haircut? They're costing us $700 billion. Why don't we lower their costs to the same 10% that's in the car business? That would cost us only $100 billion. Don't hear Republicans arguing for that. No, the Republicans have said very clearly that they are willing to throw the United States in as big a depression as possible if that's what it takes to break the unions. They said it in secret memos that have now come out about how they want to blame everything on the unions. They said it to Dick Cheney, who warned them. Dick Cheney, yes, that Dick Cheney, the Vice President of the United States, warned them they would be remembered as Herbert Hoover. And the Republicans said, that's just fine with us, as long as we can destroy the unions. And what did the unions want? Well, they were willing to cut yet again. But they simply said, leave our current contract alone. Our members are suffering now. We'll cut in 2011. And all they wanted was a bridge loan. A bridge loan, not the bailout of the Wall Street. $15 billion bridge loan, the kind of thing that Chrysler already paid back with interest, giving a profit to the government. Couldn't have that. Couldn't have that. And yet, when you compare the union shops in Detroit with the non-union shops in Bob Corker's home state of Tennessee and my home state of Tennessee, one of the things you notice is that southern governors have already subsidized the Japanese companies with billions of dollars to bring the things down there. So I want to know, and I want to hear from you, whether you think that working people are finally getting it. whether you think that people are understanding, finally, that the gig is up, that the Sarah Palins of the world who claim to be, you know, looking out for Joe Sixpack, they claim to be looking out for Joe the Plumber, actually want to destroy as many Joe Sixpacks and Joe the Plumbers as possible. Do you think people get it? Do they get it? I mean, do they finally understand that however much they hate gay people, however much they think women should be, you know, second-class citizens, however much they hate black people, that it's the Republican Party that hates them? I mean, has it ever been clearer? Here you have Republican senators, the same ones who are willing to bail out the financial companies, 50 times the amount in cash, gift, refusing a loan for 1/50th that amount in order specifically to lower the wages of American workers and to help Japanese companies at the expense of American companies. I wrote a blog piece where I exaggerate a little bit. I'll read it to you. You can find it on my website at RadioInsideScoop.com. If we're going down, we'll take American workers with us, Senator Corker of Tennessee cried. Workers must die so that those of the nobler class who inherited their wealth may have more yachts, screamed Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell as Capitol Police attempted to pry McConnell's death grip from the necks of those benighted, wretched souls who dare to attempt to work for a living rather than making money the Republican way by marrying a beer heiress. McConnell and Corker were unrepentant. It's the Obama economy now, and we're determined to create a greater depression bigger than the first, if only so we can blame this path of destruction on our sworn enemy, Barack Hussein Obama. Death to America! Isn't that what they were crying? Okay, these aren't exact quotes. But isn't that what they were trying to do? Death to America. When Dick Cheney, of all people, a person who has the political sense of a tin ear, was telling the Republican senators, look, I know you don't care about a Great Depression. We all have billions of dollars stashed away. But if the Republican Party is remembered again as the party of Herbert Hoover, this is going to harm us for another generation. And they said, screw you, Cheney. We want the country to go into depression, and we want to blame the unions for it. And in fact, that's one of our talking points. The unions brought us into depression. I guess what I want to know from you folks is anybody believing this nonsense? That workers in America are paid too much? That too many Americans have too much health care? That pensions in America are just too generous? That workers in America are simply too rich, while poor CEOs only earning 400 or 500 the times their wages are having to skimp? One of them had to have an ice sculpture only 10 feet high, urinating champagne, instead of the customary 30 feet high. It's hard times for the super wealthy. Are Americans finally getting it? Well, I want to know what you think. I really do. Give me a call. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Are people finally, in the midst of the greatest depression since the Great Depression, getting it? Are they getting it? Obama was elected in, frankly, a landslide by Democratic terms. And, well, they seem to support what he's doing now. But have you gone to your Republican friends? Have you gone to your independent friends? Have you gone to the people who were regularly dissing Barack Obama and pointed out and said, why? Why would Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee be willing to allow the country to fall into depression, willing to lose 5 million jobs, just so he could take the health care benefits away from an 80-year-old who worked his or her entire life to earn those benefits? What other than Ebenezer Scrooge and a hatred of the good things that unions have done throughout the ages possibly could be Corker's motivation? Have you talked with your friends? Let me know. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. The horrifying jobless stats that just came out should shake up even the most ardent free marketeers. 573,000 people filed for unemployment claims last week, a 26-year high. So, too, the total number of people collecting unemployment today, almost 4.5 million. And it's likely, as Obama said, to get worse. All because of greed. All because the banks were screwing around with fancy, unregulated financial instruments. All because Bill Clinton, Robert Rubin, Lawrence Summers, Alan Greenspan, George Bush, Ben Bernanke, and Hank Paulson gave them the green light to do so. The lesson here is obvious. The free market doesn't work if left to its own devices. This was the confessed flaw in Alan Greenspan's theory, kind of like the inventor of the Hindenburg confessing to a little flaw after the explosion. No solace for the victims. Fortunately, Obama knows what needs to be done. We need a huge government stimulus plan. Unfortunately, that won't happen for at least another 6 weeks. So we're likely to have 6 more weeks of 500,000 people or more filing for unemployment claims. They can't wait, we can't wait, for Bush to go. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I've been talking about the unions a lot this week. Not so much because of the unions, I guess, but because of what they represent. Ordinary working people. And I think finally that people are starting to recognize the emperor has no clothes. For 30 years now, ever since... 35, 40, I guess, ever since Richard Nixon's campaign, There's been this discussion in the Republican Party about the elite. Right? You heard it up right up against Barack Obama. Barack Obama's of the elite. John McCain, a man with seven homes who married a beer heiress, he's not of the elite. After all, he was practically last in his class, drinking and carousing in the Naval Academy. Obama's of the elite because, well, that poor kid from a single-parent home who was on welfare for a while went to Harvard. We can't trust him. But Republicans never want to admit that they simply hate educated people. That doesn't look good. And they certainly don't want to admit they hate rich people because they don't. They love rich people. And yet they use a phrase that I can't tell you how many times I've heard, particularly when talking with people like Mike Lane and other Republicans. And yes, there are Republicans out there. I'm sure you talk with them. If you don't, I do. The phrase is limousine liberal. How many times have you heard limousine liberal? What is a limousine liberal? The idea is that, oh, these wealthy liberals, these extremely wealthy people, they go around in their limousines and, oh, they care about the poor, crocodile tears. Like Marie Antoinette getting out, and this is true, getting out her gold-plated stool and trying once to milk a cow. But I want you to think about this metaphor, the limousine liberal. What Republicans are saying is if you're rich enough to go around in limousines, it's hypocritical to pretend to care about the poor. What they're saying, in effect, is that if you go around in limousines, you shouldn't care about the poor. You should shut your door in their faces. You should climb over the homeless person. You should make sure that the poor are taxed heavily to pay for your limousines. You should make sure that the 80-year-old with insufficient health care, because he worked in the auto plant for 50 years and was promised health care, doesn't get it. You see, the alternative to limousine liberal is limousine conservative. At least a limousine liberal has compassion. What's a limousine conservative? I mean, we have had rich liberals do very good for the poor in America. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, anyone? John F. Kennedy? These came from very wealthy families. But these men cared about the poor. Conservatives will tell you, while mocking the elite limousine liberal, that the proper thing to do in your limousine is to drive over the poor. Jonathan Swift wrote about such feelings 250 years ago in his Modest Proposal, which is generally upheld as the best example of satire in all of English literature. Jonathan Swift talked about how the English were mocking the poverty of the Irish and their poor Irish babies and were completely indifferent to their welfare. And so he had a modest proposal. His modest proposal was that the Englishmen and the Irish people could make a deal. The Irish people would get money from the Englishmen, and in return, they would fatten up their yearlings, their newborn infants, and when they became a year old, they would sell them back to the English as food. The young babies could be boiled, stewed, eaten in all kinds of manners, befitting a very expensive delicacy, and both sides would get something. The Irish would get some money so they could survive, and the English would get the glorious human delicacy of eating infants. When Swift wrote this, there was some outrage, much like the outrage that I myself have found recently by some who read about my campaign to ban left-handed people from marrying. If you haven't checked that out, please do so. It's on my website at RadioInsideScoop.com. It's also on YouTube, and I'm proud to say that I've gotten some 28,000 views over just the last week in all of the 50 states. About 15,000 in California alone, and in some 60 countries across the planet. It's amazing. People in Kazakhstan have read about my campaign to ban left marriage. And 90% understand that it's satire, and 10% are angry. Angry at the idiocy of banning left-handed people from marrying without seeming to comprehend the idiocy of banning gay people from marrying. Well, the same types complained about Jonathan Swift in 1732. What a ridiculous, horrible, horrific idea to have the English eat Irish babies. But, frankly, it would have been better than what the Irish were dealing with themselves. Is that what conservatives want? A full and complete collapse of the American economy? Are they really like Ebenezer Scrooge? You know, I asked Mike Lane that question, and I bring him on, and I know a lot of you have trouble when I allow him to come on and don't want to listen to him very much. But I bring him on, I even let him speak. And I do so because it's important to try to understand, I think, the mindset of people like this. It's an extremely narrow mind. It's the idea that, well, I don't want to have to pay for workers' benefits, is what Mike Lane said. Yet he supported paying for the Wall Street Ponzi schemes. I don't think workers need to have all this fancy schmancy health care, he said, where their premiums are paid by their employer. What an awful idea that people should get health care that they don't have to pay for. Well, the workers did pay for that health care. They made a deal. They said, we'll take less wages now so that we can be assured of having that health care in our 80s after we retire. What is it really about? I mean, it's amazing what happened last week. Even more amazing when you think about the fact that it's happening in December 2008. The filibuster that the Republicans had to stop working people from getting health care that they've already contracted for, getting the pensions that they've already earned. The workers did their part of the bargain. They did the work. This is the payment for work already done. The most amazing thing about the Republican filibuster of this bill, which, by the way, a majority of senators passed, just not the 60 required in the Senate. The most amazing thing about the filibuster is that come January 5th, not too long from now, the Democrats can undo the whole thing. They can bring it back. That we'll have the 60 votes easily. Whether or not Al Franken wins in Minnesota, and as I'll get to that, I think he will. But whether we have 58 or 59, we've got a number of Republican senators. It's easy to get over 60 come January. So what was the fight about? What was the fight about? The Republicans are going to lose in a month. There's only one more month of agony. Not that the depression will be over in a month. It'll take a year or two to get us out of this horrific mess. But we can start getting out of it a month from now. What was the goal? The goal was to attempt to make unions seem the bad guy. The goal was to make workers feel hopeless. To force the UAW to give the exact same wages as non-union workers would be to tell all workers in unions, you're fools. Even if the union will get you a better deal, we're going to take it away. So why join a union? Why pay union dues? Best off just to submit to your employers. It's the same kind of techniques that were used on slaves. When John Brown did a radical slave uprising in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia in the late 1850s. White people throughout the South were scared out of their minds. That slave revolt had to be absolutely destroyed. John Brown had to be... Everyone had to see that his raid was impossible, that it could never succeed. Otherwise, you'd have a huge uprising. Republicans are determined to make unions fail because otherwise workers in America and across the globe will be demanding basic human rights. And if they have basic human rights, well, what's wrong with that? This is the question I've been trying to ask Mike Lane for, I don't know, years now. What's wrong with workers having health care? What's wrong with workers having pensions that they worked for, that they paid for, that they gave their life wages for? What's wrong with that? I understand that Republicans have no compassion for anyone other than themselves. I get that. I understand that. That's true across the board. If they had compassion for others, they wouldn't be Republicans. I get that. But what they don't understand is how it harms themselves. What they don't understand is that if you make our country like Mexico, where you have massive amounts of poor people and only an extreme few rich at the corrupt top, it actually makes those rich people poorer. That the middle class, I've said it 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,000 more, that the middle class and the working class, they are, we are, the engines of the American economy. That unions help the economy. That Henry Ford, anti-Semitic bastard though he was, understood that he had to pay his workers enough in the Model T factories so they could afford his cars. The Republicans, I guess, are like Marie Antoinette. Let them eat cake, right? Let them eat the cake of Joe the plumber and limousine liberals and Joe Sixpack. And all these cutesy terms for suggesting that, well, people who go to college don't know what they're talking about. Liberals don't know what they're talking about. People who want to help blacks and gays and women and Asians and Jews and atheists and disabled people and transgendered people. Well, they're just helping a bunch of weirdos and minorities. Divide and conquer. I think this time will be remembered. Far be it from me to in any way say that Dick Cheney is a prophet. But I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it here and now. Dick Cheney told the Republicans they will be remembered as the Herbert Hoover of our time, and so will they. And we can make sure it happens. Herbert Hoover, to his credit, didn't know that in 1929 and 30 and 31 and 32, that balancing the budget, that helping business at the expense of the poor, you could at least argue he didn't know that would destroy the economy. We know better now. We've had 80 years of economics. The Republicans who met in that room made clear that they understood that it would drive the economy deeper and deeper into depression, but they said that they could just blame it on Obama. They could just blame it on Obama. I'm just waiting for the first person on Fox News to talk about the Obama depression. And we almost should lay odds on when it's going to happen. Will it be March? Will it be February? Will it be January 21st? I think we need a pool for that. They want the country to go into depression because they want to blame the Democrats. But I have this wild hope, this wild optimistic hope that this time Americans won't be fooled. That this time Americans will understand that they'd rather have someone in the limousine be liberal and care about their existence than be conservative and step on the homeless person in order to get in those limousines. I'm hopeful that Dick Cheney will be right. And this will be a time when it is remembered that it was the Republicans during the greatest depression since the Great Depression, at a time when workers are surviving entirely on their pensions and health care, because after all, their 401ks dropped in half, right? Republicans want us to ignore Social Security, end it, put it all in the stock market. They're not talking very loudly about that now, given the stock market cut in half in 4 months. They want to take away our Social Security. They want to take away our health care. They want to take away our pensions. They want to make sure that we are entirely dependent on the whims of the same people who brought us the Wall Street Ponzi schemes of today. And for what? What do they get out of it? What could they possibly get out of wanting a Great Depression, out of destroying American unions, out of destroying American workers, out of making sure that 85-year-olds lack health care in what is still, despite everything, the richest nation on earth? What do they get for it? Well, they get more political contributions, get a lot of campaign dough, and they get a weakened union that has helped in liberal causes for 100 years. One of the things that you learn when you go to those high-pollutant colleges about the nature of revolution is that if you beat down people hard enough, they can't revolt. Martin Luther King was not born poor. Martin Luther King was, by the standards of his community, fairly well off. And he could lead the way. Moses, who led the Hebrews out of slavery in Egypt, grew up in the Pharaoh's kingdom. Because had he been a slave, he probably would have been working too hard to lead his people to freedom. Roosevelt and Kennedy, as I've pointed out, both had lots of money. The list goes on and on and on. In the French Revolution, the early revolutionaries were not those from the poorest, but those from the rising middle class. If you look at the most vicious tyrants in history, Stalin or Hitler, or even petty tyrants like Saddam Hussein or Kim Jong-il of North Korea, you find that when the government is repressive, extremely repressive, brutally repressive, murderously repressive, there are few to no uprisings. I think Republicans understand that if they beat American workers down far enough, they'll be too tired, too poor, too sick to worry about organizing a union. I mean, if you have no health care, if your children are starving, if you're struggling just to stay alive, how can you lead a movement? That, to me, is the only cold rationale for what happened last Friday. This isn't about refusing a bailout. The Republicans supported the Wall Street bailout. This isn't even about the particular bailout. I mean, Bob Corker, who supported the Wall Street bailout, said that he was fine with an auto bailout. He was fine with a bridge loan. He was fine. The creditors were willing to knock down their credit. The difference in the union wages, honestly, was a decimal point. If $700 billion was the Wall Street bailout and $14 billion was the car bridge loan, not even what, 10%? Not even all of labor's 10%. 1%? How much of that was related to the workers? Practically nothing. It was all about a symbol. A symbol of the last month of the Republicans in office. We've got to destroy the unions. We've got to destroy the unions. The Republicans destroying the unions was like the Pharaoh killing every firstborn Jewish child. We've got to destroy them where they grow. We've got to destroy them at their base. We've got to kill them at their heart. We have to take away any hope of achieving anything. Because by destroying hope, maybe then and only then, they will stop in their uprisings. Well, the unions, to their credit, haven't gone down. They didn't agree. I'm proud of the UAW for refusing the Republicans' bitter pill, and ironically, having refused it, the Bush administration then turned around and said, okay, yeah, we'll give $14 billion to the auto companies, because Bush and Cheney don't want to be remembered as Herbert Hoovers, even though they probably will be. and even though their Senate colleagues are far, far worse. So I think this will be remembered. I think that Friday, December 12th, will hopefully be taught in American history as the last gasp of the Republican attempt to kill off unions in the United States. That from December 12, 2008 forward, Americans understood that unions, though they be imperfect vehicles like all political institutions are, that unions represent the last best hope for fairness in America. I've only got a few minutes left, and I did want to talk a little bit about the various Senate seats across the country. There are empty seats now in Illinois, in New York. Delaware's was just filled, and frankly, Colorado's is likely to be empty as well after Ken Salazar, the current senator of from Colorado, Democratic senator, will likely be appointed as Secretary to the Interior under Barack Obama. That'll leave another empty Senate seat for a Democratic governor to fill. I want to talk briefly about these various Senate seats. You know, I don't think it got a lot of attention prior to the pay-to-play scandal, the bribery scandal of the person with probably the biggest tenure in politics, Governor Rod Blagojevich of Illinois. But these Senate seats are important. And I think we need to make clear that these things aren't supposed to be given out like political candy. Isn't that what we should learn from Rod Blagojevich? Part of the problem is that governors have the right to appoint a senator when that seat is empty. And part of the reason for this is historical. We understand that the Senate used to be chosen by the states. It wasn't until an amendment to the Constitution in 1913 or 1916, anyway, 19-teens, that allowed the senators to be directly elected by the American people. And so a vestige of that day is that governors in about 34 states appoint in terms of when there's a vacancy. So what happened in Delaware, you had the Democratic governor filling in a seat after Vice President-elect Biden won his election, and she filled it with Biden's staffer, a very loyal Biden supporter by the name of Kaufman. And Senator Kaufman will fill the seat for 2 years until Joe Biden's son runs himself. Couldn't Joe Biden's son run from the Army? I don't know. Maybe it's just not possible. I would think he could run now. Do you think they'd let him out to serve in the Senate? Maybe not. I don't know how I feel about that. A seat warmer. And then you hear, of course, about the horrific pay-to-play of what's going on in Illinois. And now we hear in New York, Governor David Patterson, who is only governor because of the scandal of the New York governor, he's thinking at least of appointing Caroline Kennedy to the seat. Now, I got nothing against Caroline Kennedy. She seems to be a nice person, intelligent, daughter of the former president. But what has she ever done politically other than endorse Barack Obama? I mean, I'm sure she's a nice person. I'm sure she's got good liberal values. I'd kind of like to hear her first. I kind of like to see her speak first. I like to see her answer press questions. I don't know about this. I don't like the fact that we're getting candidates based solely on their famous fathers. Blagojevich is there solely because his father-in-law was a Chicago alderman. Our current president is there because his father was president of the United States. Dan Quayle's father, a newspaper magnate, made sure that he got his power. I don't know. I got to say, it's part of my ambivalence about Hillary Clinton, and I like Hillary Clinton, was the fact that, well, she's famous because of her husband. That doesn't mean that you can't be. I mean, you know, Jesse Jackson Jr. shouldn't be prohibited from office merely because he has a famous father, but we all have to recognize that people with famous family names get a huge head start. And when it comes to Caroline Kennedy, I'm sympathetic to the people that say she should work her way up the ladder first. Maybe she should run for a House seat first. Maybe she should run for Senate. That's fine. But to be appointed senator based solely on the fact that her father is a former president of the United States, I don't really like it. I don't think it's the way the country works. In Colorado, when Ken Salazar leaves the seat to become Interior Secretary, that's going to be a tough seat to fill. Colorado is a purple state like Virginia, newly blue. And maybe his brother, John Salazar, who's in Congress, can take the seat. And then there's Minnesota, the last gasp of democracy, the unfilled seat that the voters still have a word to say. And I'm happy to say that as the votes are coming in and as they're being counted, every single one of them fairly, God bless the people of Minnesota, it looks like Al Franken will indeed take the seat by a tiny amount of votes. But I'll tell you this, whether he does or he doesn't, whether he wins or Norm Coleman wins, as long as the process is fair, no one has a right to complain. Right? If one wins by three votes, that's democracy. That's the way it works. What I do like is that they're going through the ballots one by one by one and examining the intent of the voter. They're doing, in effect, not only what Minnesota law says, but what Florida law in 2000 said should be done. And if somebody circles the oval rather than filling it in, that counts too. At the end of the day, voters are in charge. Unless it's taking away some fundamental minority right, we have to let democracy rule. So I'm very proud of what's happening in Minnesota. And as a final note, I should just ask that each of you talk to your friends, your neighbors, your family this holiday season, particularly those that are independents or leaning Republicans, and ask them what is the purpose of denying retirees basic health care. Don't we understand that they're going to go to emergency rooms anyway? They're going to seek Medicaid anyway? What is the purpose other than being Ebenezer Scrooge? Ask your Republican friends that, your family that, this holiday season. That's it for the Inside Scoop. I'll see you tomorrow. This is Mark Levine signing off.